From McMaster University, I'm John Preston, and you're listening to Big Ideas for a Changing World. In this series, you'll hear from researchers from McMaster's Faculty of Engineering and beyond who are creating innovative solutions to our world's greatest challenges. I have a chance to see some of these solutions up close as the faculty's Associate Dean for Research and External Relations. Today, you'll hear from Professor Paulin Koulibaly, who is cross-appointed to the Department of Civil Engineering within the Faculty of Engineering and the School of Earth, Environment, and Society within the Faculty of Science, all at McMaster University. Dr. Koulibaly is leading a strong national research program in water resources engineering and also has been a champion of advancing equity and inclusion for Black faculty at the university. You'll hear more about that later. With that, a warm welcome to our guest on Big Ideas for a Changing World, Paulin Koulibaly. So welcome, Paulin, and thank you for joining us. Please introduce yourself, give us your title, and a brief background of your academic career that has brought you to McMaster.
Thank you very much, John, for having me today. And thank you, everyone who is listening. My name is Paulin Koulibaly. I'm professor for Water Resources Engineering, jointly in the Department for Civil Engineering and the School of Earth, Environment, and Society. I'm also the scientific director of FloodNet. For those who may not have heard about FloodNet, this is a Canadian strategic research network that focuses on flood research. FloodNet actually involves 25 investigators from 12 different universities, and also involve 38 private and public partners. My research interest is mostly on hydrologic modeling and forecasting, which involve primarily the development of techniques and strategies for adapting to climate change in the water sector. It actually involves all the 10 provincial flood forecasting centers across Canada. It was the first time that all the flood forecasters across Canada joined together in a single team to discuss, share information, and find better ways of handling flood risk in Canada. And then, for sure, we have the hydropower companies that also joined FloodNet because they were concerned of the operation for reservoirs and dams and so on. They want optimization tools, more advanced optimization tool to deal for those type of decision-making. And they are also strong partners of FloodNet.
Thank you for bringing up FloodNet. I wanted to ask you about that. When we think about floods, we often think of catastrophic events occurring around the world that we hear on the news and often in regions due to severe weather. We are seeing a concerning uptick in the frequency of severe weather, largely attributed to climate change all across this country. What are the different kinds of flood risks that we look at in Canada in different regions? And specifically, what are our flood risks here locally, say with respect to Coots Paradise?
Jump into answers. I would like to acknowledge the FloodNet team for some of the findings that I will be mentioning in my answers, in my responses. The main objective for FloodNet research program has been to develop advanced knowledge, tools, and technologies that allow Canadian to better face the reality of flood. So with regard to the flood risk in Canada, all the research findings are consistent. The flood risk are increasing with a very high cost for Canadians. Although climate change is well established as the main driver of these frequent and more intense flood events, there are some clear regional differences, which is due to the weather pattern and the differences in the environmental condition across the country. For example, the 2013 flood in the Greater Toronto Region was driven by a severe summer thunderstorm. In the same year, the 2013 flood in Alberta was due to a mixing of rainfall with melting snow. Similar processes have led to the 2017 flood in Quebec. The mix of rainfall and melting snow is a key driver across the eastern part of Canada. Last year in April, we have two major flood events. one in British Columbia, the other one in Alberta. Remember the one at Fort McMurray. But those two events actually have two different drivers. The flood in BC was due to a large snowfall in April. It's what we call a late spring snowfall in the Fraser Valley. While the flood at Fort McMurray in Alberta was driven by ice jam on the Athabasca River. You see, those are totally different phenomena that are driving those flood events. But they are all impacted by climate change, but differently. Ice jam is actually the main driver for river flooding in the northern region of Canada. This includes Yukon. The Yukon River periodically have the type of flooding, but given that it's very remote and there's not that much population affected, we don't hear about it annually. Last year, we also have different types of floods across Quebec, Ottawa region, and also across some places close to us, Grand River here. All those were actually rainfall on melting snow. So this year, the amount of snow on the ground and predicted, the potential for spring flooding is very high, especially in case we end up with heavy rainfall on the melting snow. Now, back to your question about the flood risks for our local area of Coot Paradise. Here, land use changes do play an important role in the flood risk. Flood waters that usually will easily end up in the lake are now flooding houses and highways. And this brings up another important aspect, the need to enhance the storm water drainage system as we continue our necessary land development in our region.
What trends are we seeing in Canada when it comes to flooding, the damage that cause, and why does this research that you're carrying out matter right now?
Thank you for this this question. Floods are really becoming costly in Canada. And this is coming from the economics and coming from the Natural Disaster Database of Canada, where we have all the statistics. So the issue of the research is not only because of the urgency, it's also because of the need in Canada and worldwide. Flood is now one of the highest and costly disaster, natural disaster after earthquakes, for example, annually seen across the world. In Canada, given the size of the country, the amount of water that we have around us, the lakes, the rivers, and so on, we need to be at the forefront of flood forecasting research. Because first, we have the capacity, we have the expertise to do so. What was simply lacking was the support for training the student that will be the next generation of manager of those floods. And we are very thankful that the strategic research network that was funded really helped to fill that gap. It was a good initiative at the right time, and the support came also at the right time.
Paulin, you have a dual appointment at McMaster. You're a member of both the Department of Civil Engineering and, of course, also the School of Earth, Environment, and Society within the Faculty of Science. Can you tell us how these two roles connect and how you're able to operate with this dual existence?
Yes, John, that is another very interesting question. I should mention that my research background is really in water resources engineering. And this includes hydrologic modeling forecasting, which is my expertise area, and the development for decision support system in the water area. So, with the increasing changes in the climate and the environment, new and more adaptive decision support systems are needed by most of the water resources managers and operators. Therefore, with the support for the Canadian Foundation for Innovation and the Ontario Innovation Trust, I set up what we now call at McMaster, the McMaster MesoNet, which is a network for sensors that are located across Southern Ontario for the monitoring of water, and weather variables that we need to develop more robust and adaptive modeling and forecasting tools. So this fieldwork component of my research connect well with my expertise and with my student in the School of Earth, Environment and Society. On the other hand, the computational part of my research is more suitable for my student in civil engineering that have a better background in dealing with more complex numerical methods.
So Paul, in the McMaster MesoNet, was a very early forerunner of looking to try to gain detailed information about a potential floodplain. How has the evolution of that technology changed? And are there now further implementations across the country?
Yes, this is an area that is evolving thanks to the advances in the sensor technology. There are new sensors, not very expensive to run, that allow us to get in real-time information of water levels, weather information that can feed directly into the type of advanced forecasting tools that we're developing. So the early systems that were developed as part of the MesoNet sensor network were really designed for measuring water variables in terms of quantity and weather variable like precipitation, solar radiation, and all the fluxes. More recently, as part of the Global Water Future Initiative, there's a team at McMaster that is now looking at another aspect of the water, which is the quality, the water quality sensors. And that is, again, due to the advances of sensor technology, you can actually be able to follow the water quality in real time with some of those sensors. And there's a team currently working in civil engineering and other departments in the Faculty for Engineering in enhancing the real-time monitoring of water quality through the implementation of those different sensors across different water-sensitive regions in Southern Ontario.
In our discussion so far, we've been talking about anticipating and measuring flood events as they happen. I hope that there are opportunities with this information to think about policies that reduce both flooding and the impact of flooding. Can you tell us what has been happening? You described some of the work around Winnipeg and other jurisdictions, but what else can we do in more remote locations?
Thank you, John. That's an important question, especially given the size of the country. Canada is a very large country. So we have many remote locations that are not well monitored, actually. We call them poorly gauged watershed, that we call them. And there are many of those across Canada. So the new direction that have been taken is to harvest advances in remote sensing. Remote sensing information is becoming really the key, but there's still a need to validate those remote sensing data. And this is where the ground truth is particularly important, because those remote sensing data need to be validated before you really can trust them. There are some correction to do using what we call the inverse algorithm, and they rely on ground truth in order to do that.
So you described some of this work that involves developing hydrologic modeling and forecasting tools. And I know you've been engaged with hydropower companies in the public and private sectors. Can you tell us about some of these successful industry partnerships and what are the opportunities that come from those?
Yes, most of my hydrologic modeling and forecasting tools that have been developed in my research lab are of interest to hydropower companies, because those are always looking for advanced solution to optimize their production. They become really natural partners that are willing to test and work jointly with academia in developing the tools that they don't have time to develop internally, and also have the student who can, through internship, test those tools directly on their system and see if it works. It's a win-win partnership. And I've been really lucky in working with INSERC Partnership Program, Hydro-Québec, BC Hydro, OPG, and Manitoba Hydro. I'm really lucky that I have been so far being able to work on different projects with those different hydropower companies, sometimes together on one project, sometimes separately. For example, with one for the INSERC Partnership Program that will involve Hydro-Québec and BC Hydro, we develop a tool for designing optimum hydrometric network. And this tool is really unique. They use information theory and combine that with the most advanced Bayesian optimization techniques that are out there. So this is one example for tool that was really developed for hydropower companies that want to make sure that the water monitoring network that they have is adequate enough to meet their need. And the good thing about this tool as well, it helps you to identify in the network which are the poorly gauged area. If you have money, that you should focus on adding additional station to tell you exactly, and in order for priority, which area you should fill next, and so on, depending on resources. So that's important for those companies that are already looking forward and seeking to enhance their production.
Your research touches upon quite a few of global issues simultaneously, such as addressing climate change, sustainable energy production, health and well-being. These are issues that are important to many of our students. What can future generations do to help reduce risks associated with flooding and water management?
Thanks, John, again, for this very important, interesting question. The future generation, I'm really afraid, will be facing unprecedented challenges. And this is mostly due to our slowness in mitigating climate change. So for our students, I will first underline the importance of a multidisciplinary training. This is what I'm really seeing down the road will be very important. The classical training in one specific topic won't be enough to face the complexity of the problem ahead. If you can stay one term or two term more to have one course on spatial analysis, or to increase your skills in programming with Python or whatever, and learn about different techniques that may help you in addition to your core training, that will help you very quickly to be better in what you're doing. So my first advice is really be open, consider courses outside your specific stream, and be prepared to embrace new ideas, new methods, new technique. Don't be locked in one stream. Open your mind, look for other solution, other knowledge, and tomorrow maybe those so-called side knowledge will be even more important than your core knowledge. That's my message here. We are the solution makers, preparing the tool, or bringing, solving the problems. But there are people who have to take the decisions. And I do think that the reason we are stuck in the slowness that we are seeing in the decision-making is because there are fewer and fewer engineers involved in where the decisions should be taken. So I think that a message to our new generation of engineers: get involved up to the decision-making level. Don't be afraid, and don't be sitting in the back and waiting for the opportunity to solve the problem. Go ahead and try to be part of the decision process. And I think that from my very humble viewpoint, that may help, because the pragmatism of engineering is important when the challenges are high.
Thank you, Paulin. That really is a big idea for a changing world. Paulin, I've had the privilege of getting to know you both as a researcher, but also as a strong champion of equity, diversity, and inclusion. Following what's been a turbulent and challenging year, including for higher education institutes, but of course for the world as a whole. There's been a much needed groundswell of change at McMaster, including taking a hard look at our campus culture and developing new opportunities for Black students through scholarships. There's also a new initiative to hire Black faculty members across campus. You are leading the effort, in fact, to hire more Black engineering professors. Would you tell us a little bit more about what you are doing and why it's important to you?
So this is a very important topic to me, very important first. And I would like to mention that I'm not a lonely champion on the issue of equity, diversity, and inclusion that we call EDI. I'm not a lonely champion on campus here at McMaster. I'm a member of the African Caribbean Faculty Association for McMaster that we call ACFAM. And this group is actually a leading champion in Ontario, I will say, on the issue of EDI, brainstorming and coming up with suggestion from mentoring to diversity programs in the teaching have been the focus of this group. So our pursuit of equity, diversity, and inclusion is simply, from my viewpoint, a pursuit of justice. Because whenever a systemic barrier is removed, it makes our entire society more just. Personally, I'm very pleased with the foresight and the leadership role taken by McMaster on EDI. I really feel fortunate to be part of that opportunity. The new scholarship for Black students and the initiative of hiring Black faculty members across campus are important, and I should say very important steps in the right direction. So with regard to my involvement in the effort of hiring more Black engineering professors, for me, I see it as an opportunity to contribute in making this initiative a real success, a model that can be followed by other universities. This is particularly important because I think that it will help first our faculty and the university at large to make some concrete progress. On this note, I can mention that regard to the mentoring, I have been already mentoring some Black students at McMaster, but also at other universities that I've not met, but three universities in Ontario that I'm involved with mentoring students in engineering, because there are not many faculty engineers out there. So I accepted to do that because for me, when I started with one for the student and the second one, I realized that the questions and the challenges that were bringing up in our conversation are actually sources of motivation for me to continue doing my best for a more just society for all.
As a Black faculty member and as a successful academic, do you have some advice for youth who are perhaps considering a career in STEM and for young academics looking to grow their careers?
Oh, yes. Yes, that's actually part of. So I'm often contacted by young academic for advice, PhD students mostly, and some of them are postdocs. And I always, it was a pleasure for me to help. And my common advice to youth that are interested in STEM has been very, very simple and very clear. And I've, over time, I also realized the message that was very well accepted. So I always put STEM as a door opener. If you're going to STEM, you're sure that you're going to have the tool to open the door of the world for yourself. Because those are technical skills. If you go to Silicon Valley, you will see the diversity there. And all the high-end industries, very advanced services, there are diversity. But the advice I'm giving to young students who are interested into that area is also perseverance. You have to persevere. You have to persevere with the training, with the learning and do it again, and then to become easier. That's what technology techniques about. You cannot become a good coding or programmer without trying again, and be very patient in finding this tiny mistake that is preventing your code to work properly. That requires a huge patience. You have to be patient and go through it, if need be, line by line, to now be able to do that.
Colin, as part of the initiative to recruit Black faculty members, there's also an effort to make McMaster a more supportive environment for those young Black faculty. Can you tell us a little bit about how that role is going to work?
When I arrived at McMaster in 2001, in the entire Faculty for Engineering, there were not many people looking like me. And it's not only in engineering, with my joint appointment in the Faculty for Science, it was the same thing. I attended some faculty meetings, and I was really very minority there. So, the importance and the benefit for diversity now is well documented. It's something that is now well known, but this didn't remove the systemic barriers. They still persist. I tend at a scientist or engineer, I consider them part of the environment, and they need to be addressed in the environment.
So, Paulin, what's next for you?
What next for me? This is a good question. So I'm currently very busy working on a grant proposal for a second phase of FloodNet. And it has been very difficult with the COVID situation. And there's a strong support from our partners. There are some financial challenges for them, but the support is there. So hopefully the proposal will be ready and we'll be able to submit it before the end of the spring, and we'll continue working with our partners in order to develop and train the future generation of flood managers and forecasters in Canada.
So, Paulin, in addition to your role as heading up the hiring committee for the Black cohort hire within McMaster Engineering, there's another initiative led by students, the National Society of Black Engineers, who are fundraising for a scholarship. Can you talk a little bit about the importance of opportunities for Black scholars to get the start at university?
Thank you very much. I think that we can have many policies on paper, but concrete action is what makes us see the progress, actually. And access to higher education for some people, depending on where they are coming from, as a natural process, they can dream of accessing higher education. But for some communities, totally out of reach. And you can be very bright, very talented, but without the necessary financial support, you won't make it. We just have to go to a training college and get a practical job to live your life. And your talent and your skill will never have the opportunity to flourish. And I think that those initiatives, the scholarship initiatives, is really to help those talented, very skilled, bright young Black student to access higher education. And I think that for those who are listening and really want to contribute in helping EDI, as we call it, in Canada at large, in Ontario, and at the university level, this is the right thing to do, to help those who have that dream and have the qualification but don't have the means to be able to do it. And I think that this will make a huge, huge difference.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Big Ideas for a Changing World. This show was produced by Jesse Park and edited by Dan Kim of the Faculty of Engineering. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or let us know your thoughts on social media. We're at McMaster Engineering on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. See you next time.